Coffee House Shots is sponsored by EDF, Britain's biggest generator of zero carbon electricity. Find out how we are busy helping Britain achieve net zero at www.edfenergy.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Isabel Hardman. Labour conference is well underway in Brighton, but it's petrol shortages that are dominating the news. James, what's going on? Because Number 10 have been quite insistent for a while there is no shortage.
There is a shortage, but it's a shortage of HGV drivers, and more specifically people who can drive petrol lorries. And that is leading to a shortage in petrols at forecourts around the country. Figures out yesterday from the industry body suggested that somewhere between a half and 80-odd% of petrol stations were either low or running critically low. And I think this is the problem. The problem is that the panic buying petrol purchases were up 180% on Saturday has meant that a system that was already struggling because of a shortage of drivers has now run into a serious problem. Now, I mean, the hope is that now that people have basically filled up their cars, that, you know, that will mean that later on this week things will begin to get more back to normal. But this problem of a lack of lorry drivers is going to continue, because, I mean, essentially nearly everything in our life comes in a lorry at some point. And so the government has got to work out how to try and deal with this problem. It announced on Friday night 5,000 more visas for foreign truckers to come to the UK. I think one of the problems that they're going to have with that as a policy is not only that 5,000 is a relatively low number, but also because there is a shortage of truck drivers across Europe right now, it is hard to imagine that you are going to see that many people coming here. Indeed, you know, there was a leader of one of the Dutch trucking unions been on Radio 4 today kind of saying, you know, essentially, don't think we'll be coming because there is a shortage here too. So only one imagines if the UK starts paying far higher wages for truckers than other countries, and you're already beginning to see that happen. You know, there's reports of one dairy distributor offering an equivalent annual salary of £78,000 for someone to sign up as an HGV driver. You know, that is the only way you can imagine that the UK is going to secure enough labour. And I think the big worry for government is that because everything comes in a lorry, essentially, being a little bit below capacity on the number of HGV drivers, the knock-on effect of this begins to build up week after week after week, heading into Christmas, which always, even in good normal times, puts a strain on food supply chains.
And James, how worried do you think the government is about this? We've often seen Boris Johnson not, I suppose, being punished on issues people think he ought to be punished on. But this is something which you can't really spin. It's something that people are going to feel if they can't get produce, if they can't fill up their car with petrol.
Yeah, and I think it is worth remembering that even when Tony Blair looked politically invulnerable in that first parliament after his landslide victory in 1997, when there were shortages because of the petrol protests, you know, that was one of the few times when William Hague's Conservatives closed the gap. I mean, I think the only consolation for the Tories at the moment, and I know you touched on this in yesterday's podcast, is that, you know, despite all of these troubles for the government, the only two stories that came out of Labour conference yesterday were, you know, that got widely reported were about Angela Rayner defending her comments about calling the Tories scum and Keir Starmer's views on who does or doesn't have a cervix.
No, late last night, James, we had the rule change under Keir Starmer that he did manage to get through, and that was on the 10 o'clock.
Yeah, but I think the problem for Labour is that, and I think that Starmer's critics are right on this point, that at a moment when the country is running short of petrol, there are these shortages, talking about internal rule changes to your own political party are not what's going to set the heather alight.
And Isabel, you're joining us from Labour conference. When it comes to the fuel shortages and the issues that James has just been laying out for us, how are Labour shadow cabinet members interacting with that? Are they trying to bring that potential crisis into the conference?
I think they are sticking to their very common refrain of the government should have done more planning for this, which is what they say about everything. And it certainly hasn't been the sort of the talk of the conference. Indeed, having been to various fringes and sat in the hall yesterday and today, it's difficult to find a common thread at the moment to Labour conference, other than that it's important for Labour to win again, and soon we will tell you what we believe. And that's really where we are. It's a sort of holding pattern at the moment.
And Isabel, the former Shadow Chancellor was Annalise Dodds. She's now in a Shadow Cabinet role where she's focused on policy. Do you think Rachel Reeves is making more of a mark?
Yeah, I think she is. I think she's someone with much more dynamism in terms of the way she performs in the media, in terms of her conference hall performance. I think Labour members generally seem quite... to be frank, they know who she is, which I think is helpful. And I was at a Fringe last night with Annalise Dodds where she was talking about the party's policy review. But as is the case with these things, until the policy review is concluded, she doesn't actually have very much to say. So she was basically just saying, this is something that the policy review is going to be looking at. This is something that the policy review is going to be looking at. And that was it. And I think this is one of the problems for the party at the moment, is that it knows it does have to spell out what it stands for, but it is also conducting a policy review. And so it doesn't actually know what policies, beyond the sort of slightly random collection of things that we've seen over the past couple of days, it should be announcing to send a signal. I don't know about you, Katie, you're much brighter than I am, but I can't spot all of these announcements any common sort of thread that says this is who we are. You know, they're not even really sort of dividing line with the Tory announcements, are they?
No, and I think that even if you go back to the 12,000 word essay, you have a situation where, in a way, it's almost too broad. Then Hugh doesn't agree with the idea of fairness and putting in Hard and getting something back out. Look, I think the problem is you can disagree with the method on how to get to it. When it comes to these core values, you're actually an outlier. If you said, oh, I don't believe in a fair society, you'd rarely hear a politician say that. And I think that's one of the issues you're seeing in terms of Keir Starmer's vision. I think it'll be interesting in the leader's speech, because I think actually Labour have announced a lot of policies. It's what Stephen Bush was saying when he joined the podcast yesterday. Yet, you still don't have that much of a sense of what Starmerism is. And I wonder if perhaps the plan to get some personality out on Wednesday could be something that adds to that. And elsewhere, Isabel, we've heard from Rachel Reeves today, the Shadow Chancellor. She has been setting out her vision. Ahead of the speech, it was briefed as a return to fiscal responsibility. You have the Labour Party wanting to show it can be trusted in the economy. But there were a few surprises.
Yes, so her big announcement in the actual speech was a £28 billion annual climate change fund, which sounds quite borderline profligate, I think we could probably say. I mean, it's strange because the coverage over the weekend this morning in the run-up to Rachel Reeves' speech were, as you say, about fiscal responsibility, and I saw one headline saying Reeves takes an axe to Corbyn's magic money tree. But £28 billion is, you know, I know we've got used to vast sums of money during this pandemic, but that is still, it's not a small amount of money, is it? But she says this is part of her pitch to be the first Green Chancellor, and this fund would basically be used for moving the country over to greener technology. And that, you know, this is the argument that's always made, that the Treasury generally in government always ignores, that it will pay itself back in terms of the costs of the climate crisis over the coming years.
James, do you agree with Isabel that Rachel Reeves is having more cut for a Shadow Chancellor?
Yes, I think she is. I mean, Annalise Dodds ran into this problem because she was so keen not to make any policy and not to make any spending commitments or sign up to anything, that she was left with very little to say. Rachel Reeves is a bit more confident. I think she is a bit more effective at political attacks, on whether it be on kind of PPE contracts that have proven to be very, very bad value for money for the taxpayer and the like. So I think you see that she is a more effective political operator than Annalise Dodds. You know, I mean, there was a lot of talk at the time that, you know, that some people around Keir Starmer thought she was the best choice for Sarah Chancellor, but it was thought that she was, you know, too much from the right of the party for the left to accept her taking the Shadow Chancellor job. But I think she is undoubtedly more effective than Annalise Dodds was as Shadow Chancellor. And I also, I thought that she also has massively improved from when she first came into politics in terms of her ability to communicate crisply and clearly to the public.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel. And thank you for listening.